Hi, everyone. Welcome to our event. This event is brought to you by Datalogs Club, which is a community of people who love data. We have weekly events, and today is one of such events. If you want to find out more about the events we have, there is a link in the description. Go there, click on that link, and you'll see all the events we have in our schedule. So next week, we have a very nice webinar and a bunch of other interesting events. So please check it out. Then do not forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. This is very important if you want to get notified about all the future streams like today. So don't forget to do that. And we have an amazing Slack community where you can hang out with other data enthusiasts. So this week we'll talk about volunteering and open source work. And we have a special guest today, Sarah. Sarah is a Google developer expert in machine learning, a Google PhD fellow, and also a co-founder of AI Wonder Girls. She likes to demystify AI to empower individuals with tools, mindsets that require to build solutions that matter to their community and humanity. And we met with Sarah in October, I think. Was it October? On a conference in Porto. It was an amazing conference. We had a very nice chat. And then Sarah was talking about what she does. And then I thought she would be an amazing guest. And here we are 3, 4, 5 months after that. Finally. So yeah, welcome to the interview.
Thank you.
So the questions for today's interview are prepared by Johanna Bayer. As always, thanks Johanna for help. And before we start, before we go into our main topic of open source work, volunteering, let's start with your background. Can you tell us about your career journey so far?
Yeah. So I got interested in AI in my first engineering year back in 2016. We were like part of an interesting journey called Beyond Educational Engineering, where we had to contribute our skills, our engineering skills, to help the locals. And that's actually what pushed me to kind of like start going this volunteering road, because I enjoyed it so much, giving back the community and my skills, that I wanted to do it as well. But from there, I started learning about what AI is. And obviously, like everyone, I started with Andrew's course, machine learning from Stanford. Definitely. And that's how, you know, after that, I got into the Udacity, deep learning by PyTorch, so on and so forth. And then like by the side, I was volunteering my skills with Amdena, with Fruitbunch AI, and then got an interesting internship from Stemway. And that's how I actually like got to where I am now, doing my PhD in AI applied to health. And one of the reasons why I actually wanted to do a PhD was to get a deep learning research, you know, like applied research in industry. And obviously, if you're going to be doing research, you do kind of need some kind of, you know, research intensive. That's a PhD for you.
And what is your background? What was your studies about?
Yeah. So actually in our engineering, we were doing computer science. And our like major was called Computer Science and Emerging Technologies Engineering. And in our last year, I did a big data engineering specialization.
Mm-hmm. And then you liked it and you wanted to do more AI. And this is how you ended up doing
it. I had like an intern in that same year, like in 2017. I was actually part of a big data challenge by E3, like triple E. I always messed it up. That like when we did that internship, I was like, I really want to do this. You know, I was enamored by computer vision because I'm a vision person most of the time. And that's how like I got interested in computer vision. And then from computer vision, I was really interested in the medical field. I watch a lot of medical drama. That's how I wanted to do AI. I applied to health in my PhD.
Grey's Anatomy?
Oh, I kind of like watched that, but that wasn't my first choice. I usually prefer K-drama when it comes to doctor drama. Uh-huh. Because they're more thorough, less fluffy.
Okay. Yeah, I also know Scrubs, but I guess it's also not really a very medical TV show, right? Okay, so your focus is on AI and healthcare, right?
Yes.
So what is your PhD about?
It's about deep multimodality learning for COVID-19 and eye diseases diagnosis. Practically, I am trying a bunch of CNN models and vision transformers, and I max and match like depending on the disease, different modalities. For example, for COVID, chest X-ray with CT, I feed them to the CNNs or the models I'm comparing, right? To do a benchmark and see which models outperforms and which models, for example, which modality is actually much more efficient for a certain model than another. Why? And is it normal? Like, for example, is it what doctors usually rely upon more than the other, for example, modality available, the other modalities? That's practically, like, in simple words, what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And for how long have you been doing this?
Oh, this is like my fourth year. Normal, this is my final year. I'm just wrapping up the writing part.
Final year. Okay. So now you're almost finished, right?
Yes. No, I'm finished. I haven't like done any experimentation for like a year, almost a year. Yeah.
So you've been writing papers for a year?
No, that's more like I have been writing papers from the start of my PhD. Like my first paper was ready by, I believe it was November or something. It was ready as in it was circulating around journals. Because like, by the way, that's like the paper that was published just recently, just last year. And it was the first paper that was written. Like all the other papers have already been published, but it was still roaming around.
So it took a bit of time.
Yeah, for the first one.
And you're also a Google PhD fellow.
Yes.
What does it mean and how did you
get it?
Get this, yeah.
Yeah. So actually, like one of the things we don't have in Morocco, sadly for now, we don't have funding for research. So one of the things I had to do was like find a funder source, you know, scholarship or something to kind of like help me support my studies. That's kind of how I was like way before that. I was involved in a lot of Google stuff, like with the GDGs, Google Developers Groups. So I knew they had a program called Google PhD Fellowship. I applied to it. If you want to apply to it and you want to have chances to be selected, please make sure that you focus on something they care about. So for example, try to figure out what they're researching, especially for example, a certain field, if you're doing it for healthcare, try to figure out what they're interested in. And then the second thing, it has to touch upon an SDG goal, like helping you or your community, and it has to help your community. That means if you're in Morocco or if you're in a certain region, it has to help your region do something. Like it's going to be useful if people, you know, leverage that research or something. I think that's kind of like why I got it. But I believe strongly that most of the reasons why I really got it was not just around like the proposal, but also like obviously my supervisor. And the second thing is all of the works I have already done way before applying to it. I had like a lot of volunteering work. I had like touched a lot up and like all kinds of different AI applied to different domains. So I think that's like one of the reasons why I got it. So what is it all about? So usually in the fellowship, you can think of it like a scholarship because it's kind of like a scholarship. So they give you money, right? So for example, $10,000 per year, right? So they actually, by the way, they increased it. Now it's 12,000. But usually like 10,000 a year for 3 years, but depending on the region. For example, Africa, this is what we have. And I believe in the US, they only give them for 1 year because usually they do have funding. So what they give you on top of the money, they also give you a Google mentor. And it's up to you to leverage this mentor or not. I am a very independent person. So I did like almost everything by myself. And like, it's just sometimes when we had our meetings, I was like, what do you think of my proposal? You know, is it like relevant or not? And then he would like, yeah, it's interesting. You can go ahead with it. That's like practically much of our meeting. That's what I did in our meeting. Well, apart from that, there is like the PhD Fellowship Summit that I invite you to. It's a virtual summit where obviously there are all of the Google PhD fellows where gather together and then Googlers kind of like talk about what they're doing in Google in the research aspect, obviously about AI.
Interesting. And you mentioned that one of the reasons you got this was the cause and that it was helping the local community.
Yes.
But also, not only that, but also because of all the previous work you had done, like all the volunteering work that you applied AI to a lot of things. So maybe can you tell us more about that? Like how exactly, what kind of volunteering work have you done?
So my first volunteering work was with MDENA. It was around the detection of post-traumatic stress disorder. So in that project, like we kind of you know, as always, I'm not sure if you know this, but usually in AI, most of the time we have the problem of data. We have the problem of computational resources. So we didn't have the data at the time. We kind of like had to get creative from where we get it. And then we were like a bunch of AI engineers collaborating together to kind of like help figure out if like from a certain discussion, if a person had PTSD or not. And we developed a chatbot for that. And for example, if someone, we believed, obviously AI believed that that person had a post-traumatic disorder, we suggested resources based on DSM-5 and CAPS. These are like, you know, like standard psychiatric kind of like guidelines that we refer to. So obviously, most of the time, we always refer them to the doctor because obviously with AI, you can never trust it. So this is like one of the points. And then apart from that, like from then on, I started like volunteering with Amdena more. So I actually volunteered with their second project, which was about trash out, which is like around detecting if a certain trash is recyclable or not using computer vision. So for example, you kind of like have some kind of trash and then you figure out if it's recyclable or not. And because usually in the world, every region has its own regulations. So on top of figuring out if it was recyclable or not, we had to figure out, you know, depend what type of actual trash it is, depending on the region. And then that was like, I believe, my second project with Amdena. My third project was with Fruit Punch AI, and it was around detecting our cervicals. So in our spine, we have cervicals, 7 cervicals, and we had to segment those. So what they wanted us to do was to segment these cervicals so that they could actually plot a certain function where they like kind of like they tried to know if, you know, this movement that I'm doing right now, if it is normal, if it is the normal movement.
But then like Conley, right?
Yes. It's like they were trying to figure out if, like, for example, when someone did a surgery to replace one of these cervicals, was the movement still the same as it is in normal settings, right? Mm-hmm. Because like what happened was that when they replaced one of these cervicals, the kind of like the meat sticks to the new cervical, you know, the neck doesn't move as normally as it could. So they wanted to know, you know, like what was the difference? What was the factor that was helping us do all of this movement, you know, and kind of like figure out a solution for that. So that was like my third project. And then like all the other projects that came after that were related like to my internship, where I started to do, it was an online internship. This was my first online internship ever with STEMOA. And actually like we had to kind of like figure out what type of topic a certain post can go to. So, you know, when you have a couple of forums, like for example, Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange, you have people discussing a lot of topics. And so, for example, you might have someone saying a certain discussion, you might want like to classify which topic this might be for. So for example, if AI, is it like computer vision? Is it like using deep learning or something like that? So that was like what the internship was about. Then I started, well, you know, started like being a mentor from an intern, from a project lead to a mentor in that setting, and then creating content for people to learn AI.
That's amazing. Like going back to this Amdena, the first project was about detecting PTSD, and you implemented the chatbot for that, right?
Yeah.
Because like I imagine, where can you even get the data about that?
Oh, so we got it from someone had a friend in the military, and they contacted them. It's a university in the military. They contacted them and they said we could use that data. At that time, if I remember correctly, IBM was interested actually in developing chatbots for military people, because like mostly they are the ones who suffer most from PTSD, you know? I mean, they go through traumatic events almost every day. So they were interested in developing a machine learning model, and that's why the data was available. So we can say we struck luck. But like, for example, for the trash out, what we did was that we already had some data, but obviously if you're doing segmentation, you need more data than, for example, just a couple of like 100 is not enough, right? So what we did was that we leveraged open images. There's like a huge Google open source open images what we did was we had to pick trash from that. And we pick a trash from Google Images. So we kind of like had to get creative around how to collect data. And this is like what happens in every volunteering challenge I have been through. And normally like this happens with people who, you know, like even businesses that can't afford to buy data or, you know, like kind of get their own data from somewhere. So they kind of like, you have to get creative around where you can find that data. And in research, it happens a lot, especially if you don't have funding. It's hard to find data.
How did you actually come across this project from Amdena? Like, how do you find this PTSD project, the first one?
That's a good question. So from my LinkedIn, so one of the things, you know, when I was back in, I remember it was my first year, the one where I discovered, you know, I was interested in AI. The whole time I was complaining about opportunities. When I got into AI, I was really, I knew I needed to get a PhD or a master, right? So I can further my studies and develop the skills. Because what we had in Morocco was still kind of like, we didn't have experts. We had only a few people who actually knew about AI and mastered it. So I needed to get more expertise and I wanted to go abroad. And one of the things I was like always complaining about, why do we not have opportunities to further our, you know, studies and get funding and, you know, scholarships and all of that. So what I developed, I kind of like developed the reflex of searching for opportunities. So right now it's like I use my Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn just for opportunities hunting. So whenever I see someone posting something interesting, that's why actually I send a lot of LinkedIn requests. So I have people from all over the world with different opportunities that they post from time to time. And so I make it like, you can think of it like a task or a habit now. I scroll every day through all of my LinkedIn feed or Facebook feed for an opportunity. Although now I kind of like know where the treasure trove is, thanks to the mailing list. So it's easier to get opportunities. But before, that's how I actually got across the LinkedIn, by actually like the Amdena thing by Ludar Berb. His name is a bit difficult to pronounce. He's the founder of Amdena. And he was posting about his, I believe it was their second challenge, where they were actually detecting rooftops. And that's how I learned about Amdena. And it was like, yeah, sure, it will be interesting, you know, to use my skills and help in that way. And that's how I came across PTSD challenge.
Okay. So social media, right? So you follow
people, interesting people.
Yeah. Yes. And then they post relevant stuff. And then you follow on that, like you connect with them, you ask, hey, I want to take part, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. But can't, like sometimes for me, like when I open LinkedIn, it can be a bit of
overwhelming. Yeah, it is. That's why you kind of like need to be very specific around who you follow.
Right.
And you need to be mindful.
And what you like, right?
Yes. And you need to be mindful around how much time you're spending. For example, for me, actually, like, to be honest, I developed the bad habit of scrolling, you know, not just scrolling. Like, for example, sometimes I'm just like holding my phone. It's a phone, right? I'm like always doing like this, you know, like scrolling, right? One time I was reading a book, which was around Lean Startup, and I was in a train and I wanted to move to the next page. So instead of moving, you know, turning
it's
the next
page. Right? It didn't work, right?
So yeah, that, you know, it's a bad habit. So right now what I'm doing is that I cut off all social media from my phone, but I check them out on my laptop. Usually my laptop is only for work. So if I do it, I do it only like for 5 minutes to 10 minutes and then go out to do my work.
And I guess if you like these posts that are about relevant opportunities, then LinkedIn, next time you open, it will surface. Like
yes,
more
suggestions, recommendations. Yes, true. Yeah. And by the way, Facebook is a great place to find opportunities as well. But please don't follow irrelevant people and kind of like think that you will get anything interesting. Kind of like try to see where, for example, it's about like, you know, the topic you're interested. So for example, for me, I'm interested in computer vision. For example, let's say healthcare, for example, for now, I will join only Facebook groups that talk about that specifically. And I will make sure that it's not a Facebook group that is, you know, full of irrelevant posts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's about a topic, but it has nothing to do with what they are posting about.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that what Twitter recently started doing is, in addition to people who I follow, they also started mixing in popular content.
Yeah.
Which is like puppy videos or, I don't know, like things from movies or quotes or like whatever.
And ads, lots of ads.
And ads, yeah. I spent less.
But you know, I mean, everyone is trying to kind of like rip some money off people. So that's why I guess they're being like that.
I mean, ads, I understand ads. Like, and ads, sometimes they're relevant, right? So like if the algorithm is good, then they show relevant ads. Okay, I don't mind that. But like puppy videos, it's like they just want to get me to stay on the platform. And then like, who doesn't like puppies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, just be careful how much time you spend in there. Mm-hmm. But Twitter is a great place if you're a researcher, because like most researchers hang mm-hmm. there. That's their favorite place. At least it used to be.
Well, I remember Jan LeCun once wrote that I'm leaving Twitter. I'll never come back.
Yes, yes. It was the Mastodon era.
Yeah, but he's still there, right? So this is how you found this opportunity, through social media.
Yes.
And so you found Amdena, then you took part in another challenge with Amdena, and then there was this Fruit Punch AI, right? Which is a similar platform, right? What is that?
Yes, yes. It's just that like the setting is a little bit different. So for example, Amdena like gathers all of us together, AI engineers, and kind of like we do have meetings, but like leaves the freedom for us to work on what we want or what is relevant to, you know, what we want to achieve. But like, for example, for Fruit Punch AI, it's more structured. Like, for example, they have a team for every task. They are the ones like describing the tasks very specifically. And then like, if you want to join to a specific task, but it's already a task there. Like, you don't have to come up with the task yourself.
But in Amdena, it's actually like they just give you a general problem.
Yes.
And then it's up to you how exactly you approach this.
Yes.
Problem, what kind of tasks you have.
Yes.
While it's in Fruit Punch AI, it's more structured. Like you would have at work, like somebody could be like a sort of a air quotes product manager or somebody like business person, right? Who translates the requirements to.
They are the one who does that. Yeah. They are the one who do that. So they are the ones who translate the definition, like the problem, into actual tasks, specific tasks. For Amdena, they do like, you know, tell you, here's a problem. Here are parts of the problem that we want to solve. Here are our objectives. But who is going to do what? Like, what is the specific task and everything like that? It's up to the AI engineers that we'll figure it out. But then I think it's because of the public. So for Fruit Punch AI, they really target people who are still beginners. But like for Amdena, they target people who are already advanced. Like you at least have to have, you know, have done at least 2 to 3 projects in AI to be able to kind of like, you know, be able to really navigate the challenge. Because it's really hard when you have a lot of experts around and you're like intimidated to do anything if you're not familiar with the vibe.
Does it mean that if I'm a beginner, I cannot take part in Amdena challenges?
You can. That's the thing. You can. They won't block you.
Uh-huh.
But it's just that it's going to be very overwhelming. But people usually are very nice. If you're not shy and if you ask for help, everyone will most than truly help. Like people are really nice. Like everyone is willing to help and ready to help.
Mm-hmm. Let's say I want to join a challenge, a similar challenge from Amdena, from Fruit Point AI, from something else, from some other companies.
Join us.
You who?
The AI Wonder Girl.
Okay, tell us more about that.
So we're a group of ladies interested in AI, like from different walks of life. There are people who are tech, there are people who are business related. And we like get together, like we find a challenge that's interesting for us, hackathon, competition, you name it. We get together and then work on it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
No, that's not it.
Nothing fancy.
Or like, what are you working on right now?
Yeah. Well, right now, I'm not sure if any of us like, because we have budgets, like the name is the same, but like we have different teams. Like any team can, you know, you gather like 5 at least ladies together or 3, and then like we choose something interesting. So there are people who are interested in healthcare, me. So like most of the time, there's something related to healthcare. I'm like, you know, I share the link in our WhatsApp group and I'm like, ladies, are you in? Who's in? And then we get together, you know, we bump up our first meeting, figure out what they want from us from a challenge or the hackathon. And obviously, like, one of the things we really care about is judging criteria. So we figure that out first. Then we figure out what they are interested in us helping solve. And then, like, we brainstorm together. We come up with a couple of ideas to explore. We gather data around it. Is it feasible? If it's feasible, we move on and then we start coding, right? If it's not, then obviously we move on to the next idea until we find what we're looking for. But usually, like, most of the, because, like, we have won a couple of challenges. Actually, from the day we started, we kept winning until, like, now sometimes we don't win.
I have so many questions about, like, winning and challenges, but, like, I want to take a step back.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So the way it works, as I understood, so there's already a community, this WhatsApp,
mm-hmm.
of ladies who are interested in AI and
yes.
doing something with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's already a community and there's not necessarily a problem that you want to solve yet, right? And then somebody, could be you, could be somebody else, says, like, let's work on this problem, right? And then, yeah, let's work. And then you start analyzing this problem, start checking if it's even possible, if it's feasible to solve it. Is there data, right? And then you go through this process and then you understand, okay, this is feasible, this is possible, there's the data is there, let's work on that. And then you spend a bit of time, I don't know, a few weeks working on that. So there's also an objective, I guess. So once you understand, okay, we reached the objective, or maybe we did not reach the objective because of reasons, right? And then you finish the project and then the process.
You submit and then it goes up once again.
Submit where?
Oh, so for example, if it's a hackathon, usually you'll be submitting your solution to the hackathon.
I see.
So if you check out DevPost, they have a couple of hackathons. So we choose one. So one of the things that we're very specific about, it's that that challenge has to at least touch one SDG goal. So, you know, it has to have an impact. That's why we are all there. We're interested in impact, in using, like, our AI skills for impact.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, one of the criteria. Yeah.
So the way I understood, and it's probably misunderstanding, mm-hmm. is like you always come up with problems yourself, but you also mentioned hackathons. So I guess the same community, the same WhatsApp groups, the same WhatsApp group, somebody could be you say, okay, I come across this hackathon. Let's take part, right?
Yes.
This
yeah.
hackathon is, it has a good cause. It's like for social good, right? So then let's take part.
Yeah, that's it.
Can you tell us about one of the hackathons?
Yeah, so for example, our first hackathon was around medical imaging. It was from Microsoft and Stratica. So I actually, like, that was the first one that started everything. So previously, I really wanted to be part of hackathons. I was amazed by people who got together and, you know, come up with a solution and then won something by the end of it. And I really wanted to do it. I tried it before, it didn't work. But then this time I was like, this is really a cool hackathon. And we have a bunch of ladies gathered together interested in AI and said, let's try my chance. So I copy-pasted the link into the WhatsApp group. And I was like, ladies, there's really a super cool hackathon. Would you be interested, by the way, to, you know, take part of it? That's how 8 ladies got interested, you know, reached out, let's do this. We created our own Discord, created our own channel, and started exchanging our ideas around how we could, you know, how we could participate and what we could offer, based obviously on the description and then the judging criteria. Usually in these hackathons, especially, you know, if it's from a reputable source, usually they have mentors. They always provide you mentors. Because this was around medical communication, they do provide doctors. So we had a meeting with a doctor. We understood their needs. Like, he told us they already had AI tools, but, like, they would like it if, like, the AI, if they were not notified when the AI, like, you know, finished its task. For example, going over a radio, like CT, for example, chest x-ray, going over a radio a modality, for example. And we notified about it. And obviously, like, help them actually write the report. Because, like, one of the issues that usually, it's not the issues, one of the things that makes it so, I think, like, difficult to do their job. It's that, you know, if you remember, like in the time of COVID, they had a lot of people coming in, right? Because like almost everyone was touched, right? So they were overwhelmed in the radiology radiology section. A radiologist normally has only 8 minutes to read the scan and then do the report. So what they wanted us to do was to expedite this part, to actually have the AI come up with the report, and then the radiologist can actually go over the report and, you know, like fix it if possible. So that's kind of like the final solution one was about. That's it. Like we figure out what they want from us, what the mentors want from us. We review our idea with them and then keep refining it. Well, you know, obviously when you have a couple of engineers put together, you know, most of the time the solution only comes up near the end of the hackathon. You know how we love to work only last minute. So that's kind of like how we usually do it. So it's like the whole month where sometimes meeting, sometimes talking about the solution. And then like the last week, we're all rushing, you know, putting it full front to be able to deliver the solution we kind of agreed on. And usually like most of the time, we kind of try to deliver as much as we can. That means, for example, for the medical imaging, we did not only, for example, take the radiology detected, it was about hand fracture. Does the patient have hand fracture or not? Delivered the report, we also provided a dashboard so they can see all the cases that were coming in and all the details that you can find in a DICOM file, that is like gender, demographics, anything you can think of it. And then we provided what we call future work, that is like improving the platform, you know, the UI of the platform, the visuals, and then, you know, like the delivery, and then like sending the message over to their phones, tablets, whatever they have hands on. So we don't usually, so in almost all of our hackathons or challenges we work on, we never provide one solution. That's actually the power of number, because like most of the time we're 5 to 8 people. So we have the luxury of having everyone focus on an aspect that could be added. So we don't work on one solution, we work several solutions in one package. That's the reason why we win. Okay. Obviously, we respect the judging criteria and a lot of other stuff.
Okay, so do I understand correctly that there's actually a question, how to win, what's the key to winning hackathon?
Okay.
So let me try to summarize what you said, and then mm-hmm. maybe we'll add more. So first of all, you have a mentor, and you need to get most from this mentor to really understand what they yes. want from you.
Mm-hmm.
So these people will tell you what kind of things you need to do, right? So they will help you understand the
Smart.
Criteria. They will help you to understand what exactly you need to give at the end. To show.
But wait, by the way, they won't tell you. You need to get it out from them.
Yeah, of course. So it's not like they just, oh, here, by the way, this is how you do this, right? So you ask. Right? Okay, you will tell us how to do this, but so let me finish the summary. Then the second thing is you don't focus on one single thing, right? So once you figure out, okay, this is the problem, this is the solution, you explore other solutions, right? And then you think, okay, like there are 2-3 potential things we can do. How can we put them in one package to form one solution from them? And then you split into subgroups and work on these sub-solutions. And then you present it as a whole thing. And that's why you win. So that's the key to winning. Understanding the requirements, talking to your mentors, and presenting multiple solutions. Is there anything else? Like, what else you would add?
Yeah. So you can think of it like a business. So in business, usually you have obviously clients and you have an offer, right? So one of the key criteria in business is to understand your clients to be able to provide them with the offer that is going to suit them, right? This is very similar in hackathons or challenges or anything you're doing. Right? So you need to understand the judges. So what do the judges care about? You first need to know who they are, if it's possible. Otherwise, you need to read through the lines. Like, what matters to these people? What is it that they stressed about that you really want to get at? So this is like the most crucial part. And you need to be very careful of the judging criteria. So what do they want? What are they going to be, giving notes on? So for example, if they care about inclusion, nice. In your presentation, make sure you leverage the fact that you're an amazing 8 ladies from all over parts of the world, right? And working on AI. So this is a winning, like this is a winning point in one of the judging criteria, for example. So if they care about, I don't know, some kind of like, let's say they care about the environment, figure out a way to add the environment in your solution, right? So figure out how to leverage what they're looking for, what they care about as judges, as people, as a person, and then as organizers of the hackathon. And if you kind of try to figure out what they want out of the hackathon, that will be a plus. That's like the best way to win, is to understand what they want and kind of like deliver on it to the best you can. Mm-hmm. That's the winning criteria.
That's smart. And is there something that most people miss? Like, I guess if there is criteria, if there is a list of criteria, then most people try to, okay,
yeah,
they care about environment, so let's add something. Is there something that most people miss?
Yes. No, there is. There's one thing actually that we all miss on. It's the fact that we say, I can't do this, right? So what I invite you to do is not to think about the fact that you can't do this. It's to think about what you can do with what you have, right? So for example, let's say, I don't know, let's say, for example, I want to build a model that detects if someone has, I don't know, hair loss or not. Through, for example, some kind of data from bio, not, for example, from images, right? It's difficult if you don't have the data. But what if you got creative around it? Do you really have to have that data? Isn't there some kind of other place where you can find similar data? Or you can, you know, kind of, I think right now with LLMs, you can create your own data. And, you know, what they're looking for is for you to show them that it's possible to be done. In a hackathon, they're not looking for the final solution. That's not possible. Like when you have 1 month to 2 months, you can only come up with the MVP, right? So that's what you want to do. Focus on how you can build the MVP and don't think about, I don't have the means. So for example, if you lack computational power, there's Kaggle, there's Colab, you know, leverage the resources you have, get creative around what you can build. This is like one of the reasons why we usually fail in a hackathon. People give up too early because when they get into the solution, they're like, oh my God, what did I get into? This is not possible to be done. But that's not how you should like approach it.
So the state,
the mindset
should be like, it's not like it's not possible, but how can I do something that brings me closer? And then it could be just thinking, maybe taking a step back and then exploring other ways to do this, like instead of getting data, you generate the data, or like, as you said,
from social media, research papers.
So what if I'm the least creative person on earth? How do I go about being creative when it comes to getting data?
That's a cool question. Well, thanks to generative AI, you have ChatGPT, you have Gemini, you have all kinds of AIs to help you get creative. So you can just go around and delete. So I want to, you know, I want to build this solution. Just tell it everything you have as a problem. There is no data. I have never worked on this before. Mm-hmm. I have only experience in, I don't know, like try basic machine learning models. How can I win this hackathon with the following judging criteria, with, you know, I'll give it all the descriptions and then let it run wild. And the only thing you have to do, pick the solution that you feel most comfortable mm-hmm. with.
Yeah. So basically just tell the chatbot all you know about the problem.
Yes. And what you want from it.
Yeah.
So this is like one way. If we didn't have AI, how can you do that? So one of the best ways is, one of the things I forgot to talk about is your team. So you need to pick the right people in your team. In your team, there is a need for someone to be creative. There's a need for someone to love doing things. That is, someone is going to build the actual solution. There's a need for someone who is a little bit technical. They don't have to be 1,000% know how to do it, but they at least have to know how to do something. So your team is one of your assets. If you can't, and if you're not a creative, but you want, you know, get ideas, simple. There are a couple of ways you can do it. First things first, you can go to Reddit, figure out what people complain about in that subject area, domain. Here you go. Here's your idea. There's a lot of complaints. Just pick the one you find the most, you know, relatable to the hackathon or challenge, or research, if you're doing research, by the way. This is like It's the same thing. Whatever you want, a project you want to start, even a startup, go do some market research. Like, try to understand what people are complaining about and leverage that to come up with a solution. So this is like one of them. And usually if you're in this field related to it, you might want to start reading research papers on a weekly basis, or at least follow people who do. So for example, I'm not a really huge fan of reading typical research papers. I only love reviews, Tora reviews. So I don't usually read much of the normal papers, but I do follow up a lot of people who read papers. Practically all researchers I'm interested in, I follow them. And then they are like the enthusiasts, people who are interested in like in a certain specific topic, and they share about it. So the only thing I have to do is scroll through my feed, and here I am. I know like practically everything that there is to know about the latest stuff happening.
How do you find them on Twitter?
Oh, simple. I just follow one person, and then there is a suggestion to follow a couple of others.
On Twitter, right?
On Twitter.
Because there is a question from Omar. What's the best way to foster your Twitter?
Oh, cool. Yeah. So here it is. Yeah. The easiest way. Let's say, for example, let's pick you for example. What is your favorite subject in machine learning or deep learning in general?
Let's say NLP.
All right, cool. NLP. What do you like in NLP? There are so many stuffs about it.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot.
Let's pick one. Let's say transformers.
Transformers. So I was going to say fake news, but like, let's say.
That's good. Let's say fake news. So the only thing I'm going to do is like, I'm going to go to Google, like the Google Scholar, then type NLP fake news, right? And then I will get a couple of paper suggestions. And based on your preferences, I usually like you can rank by date, and then you can check out their papers. Someone you like, their papers you like, try to figure out if they are on Twitter. They're not on Twitter, try to figure out if they're on LinkedIn, right? So kind of like try to figure out the people that you like the stuff from. Follow them. Just follow them. Or you can just use hashtags. Use hashtag NLP, hashtag fake news in research bar of Twitter. And you have a couple of people that you can check out. And obviously, like before you click on follow, please make sure that you check out all of their feeds to be sure that it aligns with your values. Otherwise, you might get some very bad unexpected stuff.
Because even though they are researchers, they are also people, and they might share the travel plans, right?
But yes, just make sure that it aligns with your values.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so find things on Google Scholar and then find the people on Twitter.
Or attend conferences if you're not a research person. Attend an event. And then get to know people. See if they have their Twitter. If you like someone, ask for their Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Or obviously their social media.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the budget, for example, to attend a conference, because sometimes it's expensive, what you can do is go to the conference you like and then see the list, speakers list. Usually they provide the program for free, like you can just check it out and see like the talk that you like. By the way, try your chance. Copy paste that title and their name and see if the talk has been recorded, if it's on YouTube or if it's even shared on social media, right? Or just Google it and see if it's shared. Well, obviously, watch it. See if you like it. If you like it, then follow that person. Otherwise, move on. I mean, just research. Just use your creativity.
And then, as you said, once you follow one person, then Twitter suggests you.
You can follow the others. Yes.
Like that person. Okay, that's smart.
Thank you.
Another question.
Uh-huh.
Can you share tips on how to apply for these volunteering projects?
Oh yeah, that's true. Let's say for example, there's the Andena challenge. They have a lot of challenges, by the way. You can check them out, and in different areas, they touch different SDG goals. So let's say you like the challenge. One of the first things we do is read about the challenge. Okay, just know what it is, what you're going to do, and how comfortable you're going to be with it. You can think of it like applying to a job. So usually when you're applying to a job, you need to figure out what they want from you, and you need to adapt your CV to that. So I don't think they ask for a CV, but they will be doing an interview. So when they're doing an interview, think of it like, you don't need to think of it like a job interview. So be very relaxed. I mean, it's just volunteering. They're not going to pay you. It helps usually like calm the nerves when you know they're not paying you. So just pitch yourself, you know, just tell them, let's say, for example, it was around PTSD, you know, like post-traumatic stress disorder. I was never a psychologist or anything like that, but I'm a huge fan of medical field and I'm a huge fan of human's behavior in general. So I was like, when they asked me why they wanted to join, I just like talked about my passion. And I just kept mumbling, here is why. You know, so just be direct and try to, when you're talking, try to showcase like how relevant your skills are to what you're applying for, right? So for example, if you have done NLP before, even though it's not in healthcare, you can mention that. What they want to see is just the fact that you have already done this so that they don't want you to get into the challenge and then stay stuck. Because you will see a lot of people like rocking it, doing, you know, going hard on the tasks and then coming up with solution and you're there like stuck and then looking at them, not doing anything, right? So they want to make sure that you at least have the basics to be able to navigate around the river.
And like I'm wondering, mm-hmm. what do you actually get from participating in these projects? Like it's not paid, so you're getting some experience, I assume. Mm-hmm. So what is it in there for you? Like why do you take part? Or why would I want to take part? What do you think?
Okay. So I will be talking about impact and then practical. Let's start with practical. So when you're trying to search for an internship, most of the time you will be applying to different internships, right? And they tell you they are, you know, like doing X or Y. Like they will be giving you to do specific tasks, right? When you get in, they don't give you that. They give you something completely unrelated most of the time. Or at least they will give you something that is similar, but it's not really what you signed up for. With volunteering, you get to choose what you want to apply to. And actually what they tell you is going to be done is 100% what is going to be done and a little bit more. So you're going like to do that, touch that, and then touch a couple of more other things that you might be excited about for growth. So this is one. In internships, I'm not sure if it's this case everywhere around the world, but some of them are paid, most of them are not. So you don't get paid either way. Now, for internship with an organization, usually what they end up giving you is like a statement that you did in the internship with them. That is also the case with Omdena or Foodpunch. They are any kind of other volunteering platform. They will give you a certificate saying that you actually did, you know, participate in the challenge or volunteer or whatever. Let's talk about now employment. So usually in employment, what one of the things that they will require from you, apart from the certificate, for example, they will require people they can talk to, right? People from the volunteering side will be super happy to actually help you get a referral, like refer you to jobs or even actually like, you know, vouch about your skills, especially if you did well, you know, if you contributed and you were active, they will be super happy to recommend you and even actually help you find jobs. In the corporate world, to get them to do your referral is just like trying to push them to wet someone. It's really difficult. In volunteering, you meet people from all over the world. You don't just meet like people who have worked on like one issue or like very specific issues. They have worked on different things and they have a different broad view, right? Different mindset, different cultures. And so you get to actually play the role you want. Like, for example, you might be the team lead, or you might be like a project manager. You might be something that you want to, but in an organization, they can't give you that position because quote, you don't have the experience. You don't have what it takes to do that. So here in volunteering, you have flexibility. In a typical job setting, you don't. That's actually like one of the main advantages. In a work setting, impact is not what is most of the time important. It's actually profit or the task is, you know, required by the employer. In volunteering, the most important thing is actually impact. So if something doesn't have impact, most likely we will scratch it from our list. These are all the benefits.
So experience, connections, and then impact. And then I guess you also feel good because you helped some social cause, right?
Yeah. And soft skills.
soft skills.
Which are actually like highly valuable, but we don't usually acquire much. If you're in an organization, they might not give you the chance to present a project, talk about it, and then, you know, like debate it with other employees. But in, you know, when you're doing it volunteering, you have a bunch of people, you know, you can talk to, and then obviously, like, you get to practice your communication, you get to practice presentation if you want to do that. And then obviously you also get to, if you're non-English speaking or non-language speaking something and you want to practice it, you get to the chance to practice your English with. Actually, that's one of the reasons why so many people think my English is good. It's because I have been collaborating with a lot of people and talking in English.
And right now in Datadog's Club, we have a course about data engineering. And there is a question. Mm-hmm. Do you know any opportunities for data engineers? So like if I'm a data engineer or if I am studying to become a data engineer, mm-hmm. can I also apply for these Amdana projects, or it's more like for data scientists, AI people?
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing this volunteering work, remember that a task is broad. What you want to do will relate to how you want to do it, right? So they're not going to force you to do something. So this is one of the perks about it. So if you're interested in data engineering, let's say in data engineering, one of the most important things is actually like picking the right data and preparing, right? You could go ahead and say, I will start a task around data engineering, you know, like preparing the data for the data scientists or AI or ML people to actually, you know, fully like leverage it. So you can do that. So the only thing you need is obviously the knowledge.
Data scientists will be very happy.
Yeah. Oh, they will be over the moon.
Yeah. Just like, okay.
And by the way, like mostly in this volunteering work, most of the time the data is a huge mess. So it's a great experience for you to learn the real mess of data and to deal with it.
And then you mentioned that in one of the hackathons, you also built a dashboard, not only like the model, but also a dashboard. And in order to build the dashboard, you need to have the foundation. You have to have the data in the right form, such that you can present it. And then this is something that data engineers usually do.
Yeah, but like usually, for example, you know, when you're doing this with everyone in AI engineer, you kind of like learn a couple of skills that have nothing to do with your title. And that's actually one of the things that are really cool, is that you get to touch upon all the parts that you might want to explore. But normally in an organization, they won't give you the chance to touch it because you don't have the skills.
We don't have a lot of time. So there's one last question.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned when you were looking for opportunities and when you still look for, I think, yeah. So I asked you, how do you usually find these opportunities? And you said social media. But right now I'm cutting down on that. I'm only doing it from desktop. But you also mentioned that you're subscribed to newsletters.
Yes.
Where you get these opportunities from. So can you mention which newsletters are these?
Yeah. So for example, WIML, Women in Machine Learning, they keep posting every day about opportunities. PhD opportunities, PhD students opportunities, job opportunities for all expertise levels. So please subscribe to their Google Groups, mailing list. And also, NeurIPS has its own main list, but NeurIPS is only active during the conference days. That's where usually they share about opportunities, and they might request you to send in your CV so they can send you these specific opportunities. Apart from that, there is like a couple of great newsletters. But it's for French people, for people who are in France or knows how to speak French. There are lots of couple of great research newsletters. There are a lot of them. So yeah, just Google them and then you will find them all over. They have great opportunities as well. But there are like a couple of other newsletters. Like for example, your newsletter as well does provide sometimes about like opportunities. So just subscribe to the newsletters that are AI specific. And especially for communities, like usually as communities that share these kind of relevant job offers, opportunities. But if it's one person newsletter or something, you know, specific, they might not share about them because that's not their interest. Like it's not what their audience wants from them.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
That was nice. It's really great to speak with you. And yeah, thanks for sharing all your experience with us. It was very motivating, and I'm sure you managed to convince a few of the listeners to actually give it a try. So thanks a lot for doing that.
I hope so. You're welcome. It's a great pleasure.
Yeah.
And please, you know, like, reach out to me whenever you need anything.
And then, so people were asking for your LinkedIn. I already shared it.
Thank you.
So, yeah. You like connection requests, do you?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, then that's all we have time for today. So thanks, everyone. And have a great rest of your day, of the week, and see you soon.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.